This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, where we talk about the biggest stories from across Texas. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard. In just a moment, we're going to talk about pain at the gas pump. If you've filled up your car lately, you know that gas prices have been rising all across the nation, and Texas has not been immune to that. We'll talk about some possible solutions to that. But first, I sat down with Aaron Anderson to talk about the debacle that is happening in Harris County elections and the ousting of their own elections administrator after they found 10,000 ballots that were unaccounted for. Check it out. Aaron, you've been following this story very closely, as you have in Harris County, Texas's largest county. The elections administrator has now announced that she's going to be resigning after what was pretty much a disastrous primary election earlier this month.
That's right, Brandon. Isabel Longoria, the elections administrator for Harris County, the largest county in the state with 2.5 million voters, has resigned after a week of revelations about the fiasco, as it was called, of these primary elections on March 1. There was a long list of problems from the polling places, and then the revelation over the weekend that there were 10,000 mail ballots that had come in that were valid, but the votes had not been included in the totals reported to the state. So that was pretty much the last straw.
I mean, this is amazing. I mean, when you watch these results come in on an election night, you know, Texas has 254 counties, and it looks like all of them are able to get this out in somewhat of a timely process. And then you've got Harris County, of course, the largest county that seems to be stumbling with this. Break down what exactly went wrong.
Well, it's such a long list, Brandon. People who work inside the polls, experienced election workers who had had issues with Longoria in a couple of the previous elections, the smaller ones she's done, were talking about the voting machines didn't work. The ballot paper sent to the polling place for voters to use was the wrong size. The ballot is so big in Harris County, it required legal size paper, but they sent letter sized ballot paper to the polling locations, literally cutting off some of the races that voters were eligible to vote in. They weren't responding to calls at the polls. They had reassigned election workers without telling the parties, because remember, both parties, Democrat and Republican, they run the primaries, but they contract with the elections office to do the management. So it was mistakes and mismanagement and lack of communication all throughout, leading right up through election day.
And you even have now some lawsuits that are even being talked about. A lot of frustration, predictably, from the Harris County Republican Party.
Well, that's right, Brandon. The first rumblings came after Isabel Longoria said she simply wasn't going to be able to get the results turned in on time as required by state law. And as you know, as all 253 other counties were able to do, just blew by the deadline, didn't get the numbers in. So Republicans and Democrats in Harris County were already fuming. Then over the weekend when they found out, oh, and 10,000 mail ballots weren't even included in the count, Harris County Republican Party came out Monday morning with a lawsuit saying this is unacceptable. You know, she's certainly not met the terms of the contract. She hasn't met the needs of the voters. We want this corrected. We want oversight. We want oversight going forward as long as this this person is in charge of our elections.
How did she even get in this position to begin with? I mean, you mentioned that the election administrator in this county is somebody who's not directly accountable to the voters, but rather is somebody who's appointed to this position.
That's right. Harris County used to do what many other counties had traditionally done, which is divide election duties between the county clerk and the tax assessor. And those are both elected positions directly accountable to the voters. Well, late in 2020, the Harris County Commissioner's Court, which is dominated by Democrats, headed by County Judge Lena Hidalgo, decided they wanted to have an elections administrator. This is allowed for in state law. The county can make this change. They said, no, we want to switch now to an appointed elections administrator. Fine. But the person they selected that they appointed to this position had no experience at all in running elections. She was a partisan appointee, Isabel Longoria. And this is the result when you hire somebody with no experience to run elections in the largest county in the state.
Do we see similar problems, I'm curious, happening in other cities or other counties rather that have an elections administrator?
Well, it's not so much whether you have the administrator or the clerk, it's whether that person is competent to do the job. Mm-hmm. So either setup can work. Now, granted, the clerk setup is more directly accountable to the voters, but you can have good and bad in both positions. So we see that across the state. But you certainly don't hire somebody with no experience running an election to just start doing it out of the box.
Pretty soon, as this stuff started to come out of Harris County, and we were finding out about these 10,000 unaccounted for ballots and so on and so forth, you had some on the left claiming that Senate Bill 1, referring to the omnibus election integrity bill passed by the state legislature last year, was somehow to blame for this. Is that true?
Not true at all. Because the problems, many of which I just recounted, had nothing to do with Senate Bill 1. Senate Bill 1 didn't say send the wrong ballot size paper to the polls. It didn't say send machines that don't work and then don't go fix them. It certainly didn't say don't bother to count 10,000 mail ballots. And in fact, a new provision from Senate Bill 1 created a sort of a reconciliation process that revealed that this had happened, that there was this mismatch between counted votes and mail ballots. Isabel Longoria simply overlooked it until the weekend following the election and said, oops, we forgot to count these ones.
Amazing. So, last question before you go. What are voters, what are normal citizens supposed to do when they see this kind of activity taking place?
Well, of course, it's really shaking the confidence of voters that these elections are run well. The first thing I always tell voters to do is get involved in the process, right? When you're inside of it, you can see what's happening and how it's going. You have to report it to local officials. Obviously, the Harris County Republican Party, the Democrat Party too, their elections were just as messed up in these primaries. So you have to report it to the party officials and right up on this to the state level and up to the Secretary of State to make sure that these things are being tracked and followed up on. And I will say that one of the big problems here is that even though Isabel Longoria has resigned, she made it effective July 1st. Therefore, there's two elections in May that she will still technically be in charge of. And that's something that that the parties are challenging as well.
Absolutely. Well, we know we're going to continue to follow this. Thank you so much for the update.
Thank you, Brandon.
Well, gas prices are continuing to soar. I'm joined right now by Michael Quinn Sullivan, our publisher. Michael, have you filled up your truck lately?
Ooh, I did. And, it was painful. Uh-huh. I've got kids in college, and this was painful.
I mean, we're seeing kind of record prices here. Texas, I think gas is now above $4 on average in Texas. That number is only going up. Yeah. And a lot of it's driven by federal policy right now, but there's also stuff we can probably be doing on the state level. But starting with the first part, you had a conversation earlier this week with somebody about exactly what the federal problem is.
Yeah, so Kevin Sparks is mm-hmm. the head of Discovery Operating. It's a family-owned, family-run mm-hmm. Oil and gas business in West Texas. Sparks is also the Republican nominee for Senate District 31.
Right.
Doesn't have an opponent in the general election, so he's kind of senator-elect basically now. Mm-hmm. But first and foremost, he's an oil and gas expert. Mm-hmm. And so sat down with him, driven in large part by what we heard Joe Biden say earlier in the week. Joe Biden said, oh, my administration, the Democrats' policies, they have nothing to do with domestic mm-hmm. energy production problems. Mm-hmm. It was crazy.
Yeah, and let's check out a little clip from that interview.
Kevin Sparks, thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, Michael.
And first of all, congratulations on winning your open seat primary. I know that's a lot of work for you and your family, and you had some really stiff competition. But congratulations on winning that race.
But thank you.
Although, quite frankly, given the mess that we see building around the country, maybe congratulations isn't exactly the right word at this particular moment. You know, we just played that clip from Joe Biden. So how about it? From your perspective, have the policies of the Democrats and the Biden administration, have they held back domestic energy production?
Yeah, without a doubt. And actually, I think you got to go further back than that. You've got to go back to the Obama days where, you know, they basically began weaponizing the EPA against the oil and gas industry, all in, you know, the name of green, so-called green policies. You know, we were fortunate with President Trump that he repealed a lot of that, because most of that was not law. Most of it was all done by executive decree. And so he was able to repeal a lot of those regulations back. And then as soon as Biden was elected and took office, he immediately reversed all of that. And they went back to the same march that they had back during the 8 years of President Obama.
So before we started here a moment ago, you were telling me about a rule that is being promulgated that affects businesses regarding greenhouse gases and the kind of the spillover impact this has for domestic energy production. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is something new that's just now about to get rolled out. It has to do and they're going to work it through the SEC. And it has to do with ESG and reporting requirements by US publicly traded companies, where they're going to have to start estimating the amount of greenhouse gases that they either emit, or even that their partners or suppliers emit. And that's all in the name, once again, in the name of this whole trying to completely, really wipe out any use of hydrocarbon as a fuel.
I mean, it feels a lot like this is kind of the note we saw for a while of banks being pressured to stop doing business with gun manufacturers, for example. It feels like this kind of rule is aimed at telling the bank, look, this is going to be so onerous, you might as well not do business with companies that are in the hydrocarbon energy business. Is that fair?
I think they've come out and actually stated that on numerous occasions, that their hope would be that in the very near term that they would completely shut down all exploration and production of oil and gas.
Okay, so what policies should be adopted? What policies should be pursued if we're going to encourage domestic energy production, if we're going to encourage energy independence? What are the policies that we should be promoting?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much just the exact opposite, right? It is, it's policies that are going to allow companies to go out and drill and explore and produce all facets of oil and gas. And, you know, I would argue that the state of Texas is much better suited for overseeing all of that, overseeing that it's done prudently, responsibly, environmentally safe, all of those things, much more so than the federal government.
And you can see the full conversation at texasscorecard.com, and a lot of good information there. But you've got that federal issue, right, where it looks like the Biden administration is sort of relinquishing, saying, oh, we can't do anything. At the same time, though, you're seeing some states take action to at least temporarily give a little bit of a reprieve to taxpayers' wallets.
Yeah, you're seeing Georgia and Maryland and a couple other states have put a pause on the collection of their state gas tax, which, you know, in Texas, that's 20 cents. You know, on the one hand, you get this, oh, well, gosh, it's only 20 cents. Well, yeah, when you're looking at, at the price, that is significant. You got to fill up, your vehicle for, at the beginning of the week or something. But then you also have folks saying, oh, well, gosh, we can't do that. The governor can't, suspend a law. Mm-hmm. The governor can't. Well, we just spent 2 years of a governor suspending laws.
We're not just suspending laws, kind of creating laws, right?
Creating laws and everything else. So of course, then that brings up that, well, then, gosh, let's have a special session then.
Sure.
But clearly, no one wants to do that in terms of the legislature. I think a lot of Texans would like to get relief wherever they can find it.
Well, and I think it's one of those issues, right, where you compare it to some of the controversial executive actions we've seen, right? Think of business closures and all that. When you compare it to, hey, let's suspend maybe for a couple months the 20-cent gas tax, I don't know how much opposition you're going to hear from Texas taxpayers on a plan like that.
Yeah, I mean, if you just track the issue on social media, mm-hmm. you find a lot of taxpayers saying, "Oh, any relief we can get right now would be great." What we are seeing though are legislators, Republicans and Democrats, mm-hmm. who are saying, "Oh, well, gosh, we need this critical money coming in to fund our road construction," but as this fellow noted this morning in an email to me, I said, "Well, gosh, what's the good of having nice roads if we can't afford to drive on them?"
That's
not a bad point.
That's a really good point. I think last I looked, that tax brings in about $4 billion, which is a lot, but it's actually, in the grand scheme of the Texas budget, is not actually really all that much. Not even all that money goes directly to transportation. Right. I think if most people were thinking about, could we make some cuts somewhere else in the state budget? I think
not
most
a
people,
penny. Nothing can be cut anywhere.
Most kind of normal people who aren't inside the Capitol would say, I think we could probably make that work. But of course, in state government specifically, you see, it would be almost impossible to do. You mentioned, executive orders. We're coming up this Sunday on a pretty important anniversary. So Sunday, March 13th is going to be the 2-year anniversary of the public declaration of emergency. Essentially, when Governor Greg Abbott issued a state of emergency over COVID-19. Now, I was looking back actually this week as I was looking at this, and it was interesting. When that order was signed, there were 39 cases of COVID in Texas that had been diagnosed at that point. What we have seen is that this order, which is statutorily has to expire in 30 days, has been extended now, 23, 24 times, right, for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it's been the basis for not just lockdowns, mask mandates, and such, but also it's also been the basis for some of the work to push back then against some of the local mask mandates and stuff. And now you've got a lawmaker, Brian Slayton, saying enough is enough. We need to end this.
Yeah, look, I mean, we were told, it was funny, you shared with a group of us, Brandon, mm-hmm. A picture that you took at the governor's press conference announcing the order. And you guys are jam-packed into that room. It was very funny. You think that was 2 years ago today, we'd all be horrified. We've all been conditioned to be horrified at such a thought. Be all jam-packed in there. And, and what was the motto back then? Now, 2 weeks to slow the spread, mm-hmm. to flatten the curve, whatever. I think that if we had all known then, this was going to be 2 years of rewriting the economy, rewriting the power structure in mm-hmm. government, I think people would have rebelled. Instead, well, 2.5 weeks. We're in it together. And what we learned, and what I think Mr. Slayton is pointing to is we weren't all in it together. You mm-hmm. saw small businesses closed down by Governor Greg Abbott's order while their competing big box and national chain stores were allowed to stay open. You saw unemployment just skyrocket, mm-hmm. Suicides skyrocket around the state. And it is time to, let's admit that was wrong. Let's mm-hmm. admit that was all bad. And I think that Mr. Slayton calling on the governor to end this, kind of charade of emergency status is a good step to, let's just mm-hmm. stop this now.
But what about the argument you hear that, if we were to get rid of this emergency order right now, you could then see local governments instituting these, because we've got kind of in a weird, complicated situation. We've got executive orders that seek to prevent local governments from instituting their own harsher mandates. I mean, it's all kind of a confusing patchwork right now. Right. And a lot of people look at that and say, you know, oh, well, maybe we need it.
Well, look, I mean, you know, we have seen this over the past 9 months where Governor Abbott kind of realizing the politics of what he did, mm-hmm. and he signs an order saying that schools can't do mask mandates. Well, all the schools ignored them. You know, uh-huh. The schools rushed to embrace his first mandate of mandating things and ordering things and restricting things. But when it came to limiting their power, they want nothing to do with this latest order. And so you've had 9 months of that now. So certainly, I think if Governor Abbott ended the state of emergency, mm-hmm. you know, you would see some local entities try to play these games, which just highlights the point that the Republican Party of Texas and a lot of activists around the state have been making for 2 years, bring in the legislature. Mm-hmm. You know, State Representative Briscoe Kane pointed out, as related to the gas tax, but pointed out generally, the state constitution is clear. The governor doesn't have the authority to do any of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
The legislature and the courts have let him get away with it. And so we need to clarify that no means no. Mm-hmm. And calling in the legislature would be a good way to do that.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting you say calling in the legislature. The fact of the matter is that last year the legislature was here for three special sessions and a regular session. I mean, they were here for, 8 months or so. And none of this got addressed.
Right. Completely. They all ignored it. They didn't want to have anything to do with addressing this. You had a couple of them, like Brian Slayton. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they just didn't want to do it. And you can't help but think some of it's a little bit of political fear. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, doing the right thing. Maybe that's not a good mm-hmm. thing to do. Some of it is weakness. Oh, I don't want to be the guy who's standing up to the mm-hmm. governor, standing up to the power. No, it's just better to hide in the background. I'll let someone else stick their arrows. And then third, there are some of them who actually kind of like the idea of governors in Texas having this big, bold power because they hope someday they'll get to have that power.
That's an interesting observation. I think you might be right on that. Thank you, Michael. I want to thank everybody for watching. Let everybody know, Texas Scorecard right now, we are hiring. If you're interested in learning about some of the opportunities we have available, go to texasscorecard.com/opportunities to find out about some positions, see if maybe you might be a good fit for. I also want to mention that we are still accepting applications for our Summer 2022 Fellowship Program for those ages 18 to 25 who are interested in spending some time with us here. We've got openings for the summer, the fall, and as well spring 2023. You can find out more about that at texasscorecard.com/fellowship. Again, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline. You can watch the premiere of The Headline on our website at 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you like today's production, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.